Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. Invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Good evening and welcome to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. Hold on to your hats tonight. I'm going to give you the number. Well, my name is Roy Avila. I'm going to give you the numbers to call in. The number is 800-245-4237 because we have one of the premier guests in probably the planet right now on the issues we're going to talk about tonight. Our guest tonight is Tom DeWeese, the president of the American Policy Center, and we are going to talk about, as we speak, it's June 1st, 2005, and the World Environment Conference is being held this week in San Francisco. It's designed to attract cities around the world in an attempt to adopt sustainability policies in order to counter global, quote, global warming. Tom, you there?
I'm here, Roy. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I mean, I'm great to be able to talk to you, but I'm always worried about what we're going to talk about. But, you know, we're going to inform people and give them hope, tell them the truth, and get them to move on something.
That we're going to do, absolutely.
So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages.
heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy, at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. As a listener of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, you have exclusive access to our online audience participation center at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Here are just some of the value-added features you'll get by logging on while you're tuned in. Get free access to the research and articles that have contributed to tonight's show. See an important multimedia presentation titled The Philosophy of Liberty. Email the host with your comments. Get special discounts on featured books like the ever-popular Pocket Constitution. Register to receive a free subscription to AdvanceBulletin.net, which provides commentary and analysis on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. So get more. Log on while you're tuned in and advance freedom at freedom21santacruz.net/radio.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. We are going to be talking tonight about the World Environment Conference that's being held this week in San Francisco, near where we are. And our guest is Tom DeWeese, the president of the American Policy Center. Should you have any kind of questions about what he's going to tell you, it's all going to be true and shocking. But this is the guy you want to talk to. The number, if you want to ask a question, is 800-245-4237. Welcome, Tom. So what wild things are going to be happening in San Francisco?
You know, this is like a plot from Michael Crichton's book, State of Fear. All the usual suspects are gathered in San Francisco at the World Environment Conference all this week. And, of course, the issue there is implementing sustainable development. But this time, they are bypassing our national government and our state government. The target for this conference are the mayors of our cities. These guys have realized that this is being implemented most effectively at the local level, and so they've brought a lot of mayors, not only from the United States but from around the world, into this thing. And this time they're really serious. I mean, this is not just a conference that where they're going to discuss things. They've actually got two documents that they intend to have the mayor sign, and the two documents are called the Green Cities Declaration and then the Urban Environmental Accords. And the Green City Declaration says at the end, signatory cities shall work to implement the following urban environmental accords. Each year, cities shall pick 3 actions to adopt as policies or laws. Then it goes on, there are 21 actions, goes along with Agenda 21, that they want the mayors to do over the next 3 or 4 years. And, you know, the idea here is they sign these accords, and they have made a commitment, and now they're going to go home, they're going to get legislation underway, they're going to put policies together, they're going to put boards together, commissions, to begin to implement these things, and sustainable development then becomes the rule of the land in our local communities.
When you said usual suspects, who are the usual suspects?
Well, the official co-chairmen of this thing are Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco, and, of course, Senator Dianne Feinstein. It's the host organizations are the United Nations Environment Program, which is responsible for all these radical environmental agendas, including the Kyoto Global Warming Protocol, the Biosphere Reserve Program, the World Heritage Sites. Maurice Strong was its first executive director, and golly, right there on the host committee is Kofi Annan, Maurice Strong. You've got Jane Goodall, who represents the Nation of Chimps, and Jonathan Lash from the World Resources Institute. And below that, you've got Robert Redford and Martin Sheen, the Hollywood elite who want to tell us how to live our lives. Judy Collins, singer. And then you've got the National Resources Defense Council, several organizations that work on green building, the World Green Building Council. These are all guys who have a major stake here in making money off of this and promoting political agendas. And interestingly enough, corporate sponsors include Mitsubishi, who now are one of the leaders in building hybrid cars. There's nothing wrong with that, but these guys look to use these kinds of rules and regulations to have government help them pay for research to develop these things, to help put their competition out of business. So that's why they have an interest there. And what really gets me are the media sponsors who are gathered at this thing. CBS is one of them. Several of the Bay Area radio and television channels, or ABC affiliates and so forth. So, these people aren't exercising what should be unbiased journalism. They're in there promoting the propaganda. So that's, they've lost their credentials of being part of the news media. So those are the usual suspects that we find at all of these conferences, a lot of NGOs and, the actors and so forth. So they're all there this weekend to flash the stars in front of the mayors and use their prestige and their big bright smiles to bring them into the fold and begin to promote sustainable development in all of our communities.
And what are these events like? I mean, from what I've heard, they're pretty expensive, I guess, would be a good...
Oh, I think no expense is spared. They have the best hotels. They have the best places to meet. They've got all kinds of events that take place. Usually you have major media or major talents putting on concerts and so forth. They get to rub shoulders like with the likes of Robert Redford and Martin Sheen. And it's a very star-studded kind of thing. And you've also got lots of ambassadors and big wigs from the United Nations and from other nations. And if you're a mayor of some small town out in Kansas somewhere, this is big stuff to you. And it's real easy to pull you in and say, well, look, this is what the world is doing. This is where we're going. We want you to be part of it. And so they sign on to it with big smiles on their face. And then the other thing is that they have, when all of this is said and done, There's a reward program here, and this is very telling about what happens here. If a mayor achieves in the 3 to 4 or 5 year period, 8 to 11 of the 21 actions that they are signing up for, they get their city gets one green star, and they get the designation of a local sustainable city. If they are able to complete 12 to 17 of these actions, they get 2 green stars, and they get the designation National Sustainable City. 15 to 18 action items completed, they get 3 green stars, and they are designated a Regional Sustainable City. And then the biggie, the real energizer bunnies here can really achieve things here. They get 19 to 21 of these actions, and they get 4 green stars, and the designation Global Sustainable City. And so you can expect to see these kind of signs pop up at the city limits. This is a 4 green community and green star community, and golly, they'll just be... And if they achieve the 4 green stars, I'm sure at the next world meeting, they will be able to get a place at the head table. They'll probably get a plaque, and Kofi Annan may shake your hand personally. So they have a lot at stake here to do all these things to us.
Well, if I'm a local mayor and I'm looking to forward my career on any kind of level, I might even be able to get on some kind of committee.
You're absolutely correct. They have a way of rewarding those who embrace these things and do all the work for it. And there's all kinds of incentives. I mean, we're talking about the mayors here, but go back to these industries that embrace the global or the sustainable development agenda. If you are in these public-private partnerships, and that's what it is, you become one of these selected companies or industries. Developers are always villainized, but if a developer gets into the program and the spirit of it, they can make a fortune because now they get to develop with the help of these public-private partnerships. And, we've talked a lot about the eminent domain issue where the community decides to go in and bulldoze whole neighborhoods because they aren't producing good tax revenues for the community because they're old neighborhoods with houses on a half-acre lot that were built back in the 50s or something. Now they can bulldoze all that down and they can build a high-rise that gathers a whole lot more tax income for the community. And now you've got a developer who gets to develop all that. You've got real estate agents who get to now sell property that wasn't very productive for them in all those little individual homes. So all of these people have an incentive to make a whole lot of green money off of sustainable development. The only people we just have to forget about are the 100 people who own those homes and who actually wanted to live in them. They thought they were their dream homes and were secure for the rest of their lives. Forget about them. There's money to be made for the community, for the city planners, for the developers, for the real estate people. It's and they sucker them in that way. That this kind of land use controls and wrenching transformation of a community is a good thing for everybody, and that's what's called sustainable development.
Expand on what's going to happen with the Green Cities Declaration.
Let me go over some of these action items that they have. As I said, there's 21 of them, and which is very interesting because Agenda 21, these are very clever guys. They know how to market.
Yeah, they're branding.
Just a couple of things. Number 15, under transportation, implement a policy to reduce the percentage of commute trips by single-occupancy vehicles by 10% in 7 years. That's just one of the items here. And you read that and you think, well, they're just trying to reduce energy use and so forth. But what does it take to reduce the number of commute trips by single-occupancy vehicles by 10%? It takes banning the use of cars in certain parts of the community. That's what they're talking about here.
I know in some of these things that I've heard, they even have people to monitor trips, how many you might take.
That will be very much a part. How else can they do that? When they say they're going to do this, there's got to be a plan of how they achieve it, and that's it. Monitor people and ban and stop and block.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking with Tom DeWeese about the environmental conference, the World Environmental Conference being held this week in San Francisco, and some of the implications for you and for I. You know, I think some people might, again, it goes to that, they're hearing this, they're saying, okay, it almost sounds unreal that these things could be going on, but yet they've gone down history. You've told people about what's going to happen, and it affects us in every facet of our life.
Every facet. And, we've been sounding this alarm for over 10 years that this top-down control, starting through these United Nations-type conferences like this, these non-governmental organizations put these plans together from a political agenda of their own, and decide how the rest of us are going to live. And then it very quickly moved through every section of our government, our public officials, and so forth. Now they're really putting on the push down into the local communities and our mayors. And this is moving very, very quickly. And what happens is you've got all these non-elected boards and planning commissions and visioning statements that every single community in the United States of America, I dare say every single one, now has some sort of a sustainable development movement underway. And this, if you believe in free enterprise, if you believe in individual liberty, and you believe in limited government, then sustainable development is absolutely the enemy to all of that. You can't have any of those things under a system that is literally total control. It tells you how you will live. There are no debates. There are no votes. If there are public meetings, they are controlled by facilitators whose goal is to get you to think it was your idea by the end. We don't have a representative government under this. We have a dictatorship, and this is how it all starts. And one of the ways that this moves so quickly through all this, every single elected official in this country, whether they are congressmen, senators, state representatives, governors, mayors, city councilmen, county commissioners, have some sort of a national organization that they are part of. And in the case of the mayors, there is the United States Conference of Mayors. And a trip through their website would be very enlightening, which I did just a couple of days ago. On June 10th, the mayors from this organization are meeting in Chicago. Top of their agenda is sustainable development and global warming and the Kyoto Protocol. Now, we have a president, I don't agree with him a whole lot of the time, but one of the things he has done is refused to have the United States sign on to the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty because he knows that it will have devastating effect on the economy of this country, pushing back our energy use by 30% or worse. Lots of dire things that happen here, higher taxes, really reducing the economy of the United States, and actually doing absolutely nothing to help the economy, help the environment, even if we did all that. But here are the mayors who are saying, we don't care whether the president has taken this position or not. We are going to go around him, and we're going to support this treaty and help implement it. And so here's the United States Conference of Mayors.
We're going to take a quick break. Welcome back. Continue, please.
Okay. This United States Conference of Mayors is a huge influence on your mayor, and this is where these policies come from, and that's how they move so quickly. So, it's just good to understand that the National Governors Conference is the same thing, and your state representatives have the same thing. They go to these conferences, and they're told about these policies. There's nobody arguing against it. They're just told, here's the next thing coming down. Here's sample legislation for you to take home. And then it's done. And people wonder at home, well, where did this come from? And that's how. That's how it comes.
Well, I think the thing that always, bugs me about it is, they do all these things, but, they're out there doing these things. They're really living the high life. I mean, they go to they play golf. They, go eat $300 per person dinners. And, so they get, intoxicated with just that whole process.
Sure they do. Sure they do. And, we were talking about some of these action items. I just mentioned one of them. Action item number 16 is the most egregious, I think, of all of these 21. This says, every year we will identify one product, chemical, or compound that is used within my city that represents the greatest risk to human health and adopt a law to reduce or eliminate their use by the municipal government. In other words, every year we're going to ban something. Doesn't matter, what it is, and what if a community really doesn't use anything that could be determined to be dangerous? Got to ban something. And this kind of mentality, this Neanderthal mentality, ban it, stop it, block it, kill it, is just, this is not the way you run a government or a society. And it, there it is right there.
And for those folks who might say, oh, you know, you say that it invades every part of our life, let's just kind of go down some of the areas. You know, you talked about transportation. Let's talk about housing.
Interestingly enough, of course, there's a major push on now to create what they call green housing. This means that it's built to very specific standards, and this was created back in 1996 at the summit in Istanbul on housing, Habitat 2 it was called, and they had very specific materials you would be allowed to use. You know, right there in California, there's a move on now to ban the use of fireplaces,
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of things like that are popping up. A report just came out in England this last week that in order to meet the government's planned reduction, 30% reduction of their energy use, which goes along with Kyoto, the government has decided that it needs to tear down 3.2 million homes because they're not sustainable. These are older homes that were built in the Victorian age that they say use too much energy, so they tear them down, right back to this eminent domain thing. You've got a lot of developers over in England that are rubbing their hands together because they know that now they're going to make a whole lot of money building new places for people to live. And the interesting thing will be, I'm quite sure of this, that those homes that now probably sit on some acreage of land that are single-family homes be torn down, and in most cases, I will be willing to bet that they will be built in back up into high-rises and into a sustainable community where you live in a high-rise building. You may find that the stores for you to shop in will be in the same building. Maybe your workplace will be the same building. You won't ever have to go outside. You will just live in this building in these very crowded cities because, of course, smart growth blocks you from going outside the city limits. So this is all sustainable housing. It's all either houses very, very close together or high-rises where you're packed in like sardines, all living in a city. And meanwhile, you're not allowed to touch any land outside of the city limits. So, yeah.
I'm looking at some information that you had sent. Under that urban design was that Action 8. It says, adopt urban planning principles that advance higher density, mixed use, walkable, bikeable, and disabled accessible neighborhoods, which coordinate land use and transportation with open space systems for recreation and ecological reconstruction.
Sounds like utopia, doesn't it?
Yeah, we'll pick up on that right after this break. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. We're talking with Tom DeWeese, the president of the American Policy Center. You know, it all sounds like utopia, but it feels more like controltopia.
Well, you know, the thing is, like this action that you just read, the average person sitting there listening to it says, well, you know, what's so bad about that? Mixed use, walkable, bikeable, disabled accessible neighborhoods, public transportation. What's wrong with that? That's just a good thing to do. Well, think about it. What does it take to accomplish that? It says you don't get your SUV in your driveway anymore. You don't have the ability to take the car out. Your kids need to go to soccer practice, or you need to get down to the grocery store, or go to work at your appointed time when you want to get there. can't do that. Public transportation runs in one spot, goes in one direction, and it goes on a certain timetable that may not be yours. And so, this is a governed, planned, controlled society where people are basically little worker bees that go in the direction that they're being herded in, not individuals making their own choices. And this is a major thing, the problem I have with all of this, is that the individual is stamped out of existence, and everybody is just supposed to look the same, talk the same, dress the same, go in the same direction. That's not a world I want to live in, and that's exactly what they're creating here. And they can use all the rhetoric they want about protecting the environment, but that's really what it's boiling down to. And when you get down to it, these programs are not protecting the environment. It's been shown time and time and time again that these policies actually, in most cases, harm the environment, and they particularly harm the economy. They harm our standard of living, and but this is about control. This is about a political agenda that somebody else has their own vision of life, and I've always believed that all individuals should have the right to live their life as they choose.
And we don't. I've never seen this in a ballot of any kind.
None. Absolutely not. These policies are implemented in, as I said before, facilitated meetings where you are not allowed to stand up and object. If you do, that facilitator is trained to turn the meeting against you or to ignore you or not allow you to speak. I have acquaintances who have tried to stand up in meetings against these sorts of policies just to speak out, just to have their American right of free speech, and they have been bodily escorted out of the building, even harmed as they're thrown out of these meetings, trying to just speak because it's their home or their property that is at stake here.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
I'll have to talk about it.
Okay. Another one of these that struck me was in the environmental health area. I mean, on our community, you know, every time you need to remodel your bathroom, you have to go find a toilet that only has a gallon and a half of water in it.
Which you then have to flush about three times.
And use,
so yeah. You're not saving anything by them. It's the interesting one is water, number 19.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a typo in this. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But Michael Shaw tells me that maybe that's not true. But it says cities with potable water consumption greater than 10 liters, I think they mean 100 liters, per capita per day, will adopt and implement policies to reduce consumption by 10% by 2015. Now, we're talking, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, we're talking 100 liters of water per person per day. That's 26 gallons to flush the toilet with, to take a shower, to cook, to drink, to wash your car, to wash your clothes, to water your lawn, anything else you would do in a free society with water. Taking that, 26 gallons. Now, we looked it up on the in some government agencies on the water issue, and the government says, our government says now that the U.S. Geological Survey says that Americans need about 100 gallons of water a day in order to live their lives. Now, what's interesting about this this document, this UN document that the government or the mayors are supposed to sign this week, is that it sets the limit. It sets lowers the bar to 100 liters. They've conveniently changed the word from gallon to liters, and slipped that right by, and then reduced that by 10%. So that's less than 25 gallons a day. So water is the essential ingredient for life. And people say, well, how will they move people off of all of this land? How will they ever get the Wildlands Project put in place where 50% of all the land in every single state becomes a wilderness area? Well, control the water, and you can control anything. If a farmer, if a rancher can't have water, if a home doesn't have water, or severely limited, then it's very easy to move people out of those areas. I live in an area where I have a well, and I am sitting here waiting for my county government to come out and put a meter on my well. I know it's coming. I know it'll happen. That's part of this process. And then they can control even a well. I don't have a water shortage here. We have, when they dug my well and they built my house, they told me it had the highest water pressure they had ever seen in digging a well. It's like three times what the normal is. But this doesn't matter. Controlling the water when you don't have a water shortage, what's the point of that? The point of it is to control development and control where and how people live.
Well, and you know, from what we understand, it's generally a created shortage.
Yes. One of the prime examples of a created shortage, I'll give you two of them. One is landfills for waste.
Mm-hmm.
We are told we have a severe shortage in this country of landfills. Well, we do have a severe shortage of landfills because they won't let you build anymore. We have lots of land that we could use for landfills, but they have only allowed certain ones, and then they tell us how horrible it is they're all filling up. Well, yeah, they are, because it's a created shortage.
Because they're so regulated, you can't do it.
Exactly. The other thing that we have a severe shortage of are highways. The smart growth absolutely bans the building of new roads, because they say that new roads become feeders for more development. Therefore, if you stop the roads, you stop the development. So we haven't had a new highway system built in this country since the 1950s. There is one highway that takes people from Maine to Florida, Interstate 95. It is a parking lot the entire way, because there is no alternative. You have to take it. They back in the 50s and 60s, they started to build communities in which everything with the cul-de-sacs and so forth, where everything's a dead-end street that feeds into another street that feeds into a main highway, which feeds into an interstate. And this is why we have the traffic jams we have today, because the system doesn't work. In the old days, they built communities where you had streets that went somewhere, and you could take the back roads and so forth. You can't do that today in modern communities. So, this is a planned shortage, a created shortage of roads. You're sitting there in your traffic jams, and it's pretty easy when you're sitting in your car in those traffic jams to be sold on smart growth, being told, we're going to stop all this with cars. You say, yeah, boy, I'm going to get out of it. But the problem is, you're looking at the results of some of those kinds of planning programs, and you're not looking at what caused it.
Whew. My mind just goes 100 miles an hour when I listen to you talk. It's just incredible, incredible. You know, and all the time you've been doing this, when you start to talk to people who might have never heard about that, I mean, what's your general reaction, and how long does it take people to kind of really understand what's going on?
You get mixed reactions, especially when we started doing this 10 years ago. The black helicopters were flying above our heads. This is how people looked at it. You're crazy. How could they ever do that? I remember being on the Michael Reagan show one night, and a person called in and said, how could they ever lock away 50% of all the land? And, well, they have a very specific agenda how to do it, and now people are beginning to see it. I've always said that the more successful they get with these programs, the more victims they create, and that brings more people to our side. And most of the people I work with today are victims who came over and become very dedicated activists to fighting these things. People, it's now so prevalent that all I have to do is say a few words, and people begin to say, yeah, that's happening. Yeah, okay, I see that. And sometimes they just need the dots connected, and they begin to see it. I do think the other side of that is a lot of people are just absolutely overwhelmed by all of this. They don't want to know. They don't want to hear about it. And I think this is one of the reasons why you see such an apathy to politics today, because it's so mind-boggling to try to understand any of it that they just go ahead about their lives and try to ignore it and hope for the best. And I think both of those things are happening.
Well, and I would say that that's for the people who want to implement things. That's kind of a good strategy. You get people not to care and feel like they can't do anything. You can implement whatever you want.
Sure. And as you're doing that, these mind-boggling policies, you have children in the public schools who aren't taught about how the United States was created or how our republic is supposed to function. And they get an awful lot of this stuff as propaganda right into their classrooms, and they become the perfect citizens to live in such a society. They don't question it. They don't even know they had a right to question it. And of course, they're just absolutely buried under this kind of propaganda that this is all good stuff. I've got the textbooks to prove it. And so, you know, that makes it much more easy to implement it.
Well, I think when you talk, that's one thing that I know when I talk to people about this, or they want to talk to me about it, is when you get to the educational system and you learn more about what's going on or not going on in the public schools, that motivates people.
Yeah, probably the hardest thing that we've had to convince people of, as we've talked about sustainable development, is the fact that it affects every aspect of your life. Most people think it is land use policy, and it is, but it is so much more. The three connecting circles of the sustainable development logo, which environment is one, and private business partnerships with the government. Is another one, which is, we've talked about controlling the businesses. But then the third one is social equity. And social equity is every part of your life. It's the food you eat. It's the job you have. It's the medical care that you get. Medical care, now sustainable medicine, is becoming a major focus on things. Madeline Cosman told me the other day, Dr. Madeline Cosman, who's going to speak at our conference in Reno in July, said that she did a search on the Internet under sustainable medicine, and she found 500,000 references to it. This is a policy that controls your medical care. It is not about keeping you well. It is not about having well-qualified doctors. Once again, it's about banning certain things, controlling other things, helping big pharmaceutical companies make a lot of money, where at the same time, you pay, but you're not getting the health care that you think you're getting. And it just, every aspect of our life is involved with sustainable development.
You mentioned the Reno conference. Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen.
The Freedom 21 conference, July 14th to 16th in Reno, Nevada. It is our sixth annual conference. And this year, I somehow ended up being the person putting this conference together, the schedule. And what I tried to do was give it an entire focus on sustainable development and Agenda 21, like building blocks. And we're going to talk about sustainable development on the international level, the global governance, how it's all come about, who the players are, what their interests are, and what their philosophies are, and so forth. We've got Dr. Stephen Yates that's going to talk on that, and Joan Vion, who's been to almost every single global conference ever held. She's interviewed Maurice Strong, the man I've called the most dangerous man in the world. All of these roads, all of them, everything we've talked about, lead back to Maurice Strong. She's interviewed him like five times and knows him well. We're going to talk about what happens in these third world countries that are kept in their mud huts gleefully by these elitists who think, well, that's sustainable. They can't have air conditioning. They can't have electric lights. Because they have to stay poor because they can manage that. That won't hurt the environment. And so that's Niger Ennis from the Congress on Racial Equality is going to talk about the racism of sustainable development. We're going to cover all kinds of aspects of the science, global warming, all that sort of thing. We're going to have local activists talk about
science, right?
how to fight back at home.
We got a caller. We got Roger from Allentown. Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. I wanted to ask either of you, perhaps, I'm at a loss to think of a name for someone that's really picked up the mantle for Jo Hindman some 30 years ago and her terrible 1313 series of books, et cetera, and research. Maybe if you can't think of any name, maybe the best two or three websites or whatever comes to mind. And God bless.
Thank you.
I think probably Joan Vion is one who has done that.
And how would he get more information about some of Joan's work?
Honestly, I cannot tell you that. I don't have any access to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you have any questions, the Freedom 21 website, Santa Cruz, freedom21santacruz.net, it's probably a good place to go. There's a lot of links and information there. So let's. What are the dates of Reno? Can anybody come who's interested or might have been moved by the information we've been talking about tonight?
Sure. It's July 14th to the 16th. It's in Reno. It's at John Esquaga's Nuggets there. This is our second year to have it there. And John Esquaga is a great friend of the property rights movement and gives us a great opportunity there. All you have to do is go into the freedom21.org website, and the entire agenda is there. Tomorrow I'll be sending the final agenda to be put on there, but the basic agenda is there now, and you can sign up from there, and all the information, your hotel and everything is right there.
How has it grown over the years? Are you pleased with its progress?
Absolutely, especially in the last couple of years. We've been a voice in the dark for a number of years on Sustainable Development Agenda 21. Freedom 21 was set up to oppose or give a counter to Agenda 21, and for several years we would have about 100 people or so there. Last year we got upwards towards 400, and we hope to do that again or better than that this year. And one of the big things about this conference that I'm very pleased with is not only are we giving people so much information on all levels what to do. We're going to have sustainable water policy, sustainable medical policy, all these things, but we're going to tell them some things about what they can do at home. There have been some victories around that people need to know about and how to duplicate at home. There are some bright things happening, and I think as a result of Freedom 21 and our efforts, Freedom 21 Santa Cruz that I work very closely with, and all the other organizations involved in this, we've begun to produce the tools that get the word out. And I think today, the word sustainable development that used to be a real puzzlement, maybe even thought of as kind of a positive thing, that is not necessarily the case today. People are at least beginning to question it. And the more we push, I think the more we can make that happen.
Real quick, we've got a couple of minutes before we got to take a break. Tell us about some of those, victories.
In the state of Oregon, they had a ballot measure 37 that requires the state to pay just compensation for the loss of value resulting from these kind of regulations. And the interesting thing about that is that it is also retroactive. So over the last 25 years, people who have lost their land
to
these kind of policies can get paid for it, their value of their property. That alone is the kind of thing that stops these guys in their tracks. Those who are pushing these policies say, we have an environmental emergency, and therefore the Fifth Amendment takings clause does not apply. We are starting to win cases in the courts that say that's not true. Wayne Hage, the rancher from Nevada, has won a case. Over 10 years he fought this, and he got a judge to say in court, if this isn't an example of a takings, I don't know what is. And that alone has been precedent-setting. There's a case in Wisconsin. A bill has come out of committee banning smart growth. And that is huge.
Wow.
Wow. Those kind of things are happening. Eminent domain cases are beginning to pop up in the courts. A big one in the state of Michigan when General Motors many years ago took using government control with eminent domain bulldozed a whole bunch of houses to build a plant there. That case has been in the courts for years. They just overturned it, and that was the case they used as a precedent to use eminent domain.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back with Tom DeWeese. You know, we've got about 10 minutes, and we talked about so much and so much. You know, I'd like to continue if you have some more of those, you know, uplifting stories of, you know, small victories and large victories. That one, the banning sustainable development, has knocked me out almost there. But people are getting involved, and things are happening.
They're starting to figure it out. My favorite story in this whole thing happened down in Greenville, South Carolina, a year or so. I think it was last year. They send me their newspaper down there, and when I got two issues of it, and I just fell on the floor laughing as I read it, because the typical way that these NGOs, these planning commissions and so forth operate is that they have all their plans in place. They know exactly what they're going to do. They've targeted a certain set of land, and then they hold a public meeting after everything is a done deal. They hold a public meeting to basically announce it. They have a professional facilitator whose job is to make everybody in the room think that they are the ones who thought of it, and then that's how it carries on. In this particular case, a lot of the folks down there understood this process. That whole process is called the Delphi technique, and they understood it. They understood how to bust it up. And they arrived about 100 strong in this meeting. And there were about 10 of the guys who were perpetrating it. And the facilitators there, and pretty soon these guys started asking questions all around the room. Before they were finished, they were having a debate on freedom. They weren't talking about this land control program that they were all brought there to talk about. And the chairman of the thing just closed down the meeting. Tried it a couple of weeks later, exactly the same thing happened, whereupon the chairman got up and said, "I am adjourning this meeting because this meeting has reached the wrong consensus."
Wow.
I just howled when I read that. This wasn't going according to plan, and this is what people on the local level can do to thwart these guys. You've got to understand what the processes are and what the policies are, and how to bust them up like that. And I want to tell you one other thing that I'm going to tell the conference in Reno. Every day I get letters, emails, phone calls from people looking for the silver bullet, the soundbite that can be used so that we can turn everything around. And I'm telling you, it doesn't exist. There's a whole lot of work that has to be done with it. But the silver bullet...
Okay, we'll hold on. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Okay, we're back with Tom DeWeese. We're almost getting ready to wrap up a really rapid hour with you. And before we let you go, you know, I got to let you tell people, you know, about the American Policy Center and your newsletter and you know, where they can get real good information, you know, right now, the things that are going on.
Sure. The American Policy Center's website is AmericanPolicy.org. It's all one word, www.AmericanPolicy.org. You go in there, you can see our articles. We have lots of articles there. We have links to a lot of other organizations. We have an opportunity to get our newsletter, the DeWeese Report, just for a contribution to the American Policy Center for $25 or more. We'll get it for a year.
And you crank that thing out. I mean, there's that's like a newspaper work you put in there.
Well, it comes out every month. It seems like we're writing it constantly, but it comes out every month. And it has been a newsletter that has broken so many of these stories. And we are breaking the story on the meeting going on right now in San Francisco. We'll have it first, because it's in at the printers right now.
So you have the truth first, you mean?
Well, we've got the report on it, yeah. The other thing you can do there...
You won't learn anything in the news.
Yeah, you won't read about it in the news. The other thing that you can do on our site is sign up for our action alert system. We call it Sledgehammer, And I named it that because I realized that the only thing these elected officials understand is either money in their pocket or a sledgehammer to the forehead to get their attention, and I'm not going to give them any money. So we created Sledgehammer, and it's become one of the most successful action alert systems in the country. By email, we'll send you free whenever action is taking place. We'll tell you what it is, what needs to be done, phone numbers, action to take. Everything is right there in the alert. So all you have to do is go in the site and give us your email address, and you're on.
Do you ever sleep?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because you're everywhere. You're pumping out this newsletter. I mean, you're a busy guy.
We are very busy, and every issue we work on now, we work on the property rights issues, sustainable development, national sovereignty, which puts us right up against the UN stuff, the illegal immigration, all these, and education, all of these things. We see them all as interconnected, and it's all one big issue. But every single one of them is on the front burner right now, and so we're just going as hard as we can go.
And one more plug for Reno. Reno's July 14th through the 16th. We'd like to see a really good turnout there.
Absolutely. That you will never get the kind of information anywhere else in this country on sustainable development as you'll get there. The leading speakers in the country, the leading experts, activists who tell you what to do, you'll learn what this is all about and how to fight it. Just go to freedom21.org. You can go into Freedom 21 Santa Cruz's website as well. There are links there. There are links to it at the American Policy Center website, AmericanPolicy.org. You can get links there to go into the Freedom 21 site and sign up and see the whole schedule. And everything's right there.
Well, and, you know, from some people that I know that have gone, they said, you know, you actually get to talk to people face to face.
You do. There's a lot of face to face time, and I know I'm just hoarse by the time I'm done talking to people, and it's 3 days of just incredibly intense information coming to you, but it's the best.
And energized and uplifted and hopeful.
We had some folks last year say that last year's conference was the Woodstock of the property rights movement. That was pretty good.
All right. Well, we want to thank you so much for taking the time and for all the work that you're doing. And again, we want to give that information on the Reno conference. It's the Freedom 21 conference. It takes place July 14th through the 16th in Reno. We gave you the websites. You can check out American Policy Center, or you can check out Freedom21SantaCruz.net and get all the information that you need. Well, Tom, it went by fast, but it's always, always a pleasure to talk to you. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, too.
Okay. We'll see you soon. Okay. We'll be back right after this break.